My guest today gained notoriety with as a child film star in the movie The Blue Lagoon. Brooke, oh no, wait a second, Richard gave me the wrong introduction again. Today's guest isn't Brooke Shields, it's Mr. Brooke Warwick. Sorry about that, Brooke.
It's okay, Mark.
Say that again.
It's okay.
It's happened before where people mistaken you for a woman if you were on the phone?
Three times this week.
Well, and it's Brooke with an E, and
that's right.
I don't know how old you are, but what decade did you grow up in? It didn't seem like must have been not a common name back then.
Well, I started in the 50s, so I'm getting up there. But it was not common at all to have a name. I mean, they were John and Fred and Joe in my day, and an odd name like Brooke, especially with an E for a male, was unheard of.
Your parents were quite cruel, and I guess you toughened up real quick, got into a lot of fights.
They were before their time, let's say that.
Brooke, Mr. Brooke Warwick, he's an international speaker on the impact of values and lifestyles and trends on consumer behavior, and he offers seminars to businesses, market research, and he was, prior to his director of marketing of the VALS program, Stanford Research Institute. He created a video, An American Portrait. I hope it wasn't like the portrait of Dorian Gray.
No, this was just interviewing different people in different lifestyles. It was trying to bring to real life the fact that these lifestyles that I talk about and values I talk about are real things in how they affect businesses.
And you and what kind of people did you interview?
They were, well, it ranged from I interviewed a 91-year-old woman who was living on food stamps and Medicare, and then I interviewed the two people that started Banana Republic.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it was a wide range of demographics, but we really were honing in on the different lifestyles and how they play themselves out as we make decisions about what's important to us.
You know, it's a great title of a book. You know, I thought of it more as America, which is why I made the joke, Dorian Gray. Are you familiar with that movie? Was it called?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Sure.
For those of you who don't know, this man had eternal youth, and his portrait up in the attic actually changed. He was an evil man, and the portrait actually changed to reflect his evilness, kind of a...
That's right.
1940s. So you literally interviewed people. How long ago was this book? Oh, it was a video.
It was over 25 years ago. It was quite a while ago. And it was... we wanted to bring to life the fact that these people were real, and you know they weren't statistical abstracts that we created in our data dungeon.
So this was not a book; it was a video.
It was a video, yeah.
Can you find it online, or?
I don't believe so, but I've got like a couple of copies of it, and that's about it.
You got it on DVD or VCR video?
Yes. Yeah.
No, I mean, which one do you have it on? Was it old enough to be on VCR?
It's on VHS, but I transferred it to DVD.
So. I gotcha. Wow, that's vintage. That's vintage. You also authored The Builder's Guide to Move-Up Buyers, an incisive look at the present and future state of the home building industry and its consumers. When did you write that?
That was in the late 90s, early 2000s that we wrote that. It was, we were trying to play out the fact that a lot of the differences in the move-up market were not just the byproduct of how much money they had. It was who they were and how they wanted to live. You know, some people wanted to live in a monument, you know, a testimony to their success. Other people wanted to live in a nest. And those people had the same income, same demographics, but they were as different as you could be.
Boy, that's very interesting. I like that. And that's called The Builder's Guide to Move-Up Buyers. And I bet that hasn't changed much in, well, you know, we'll talk about homes and pandemic and changes. Would you say, if you were going to do a second edition or whatever, you know, whatever they call that, to that book, do you think it's shifted a lot since then, or do you think it's similar?
It's shifted, but some of the same principles are still quite active. I mean, I to this day, I still use some of the foundation that we established in that particular study of move-up buyers, and I found it invaluable. And the more we dug in, the more we got to the root of, I think, what's happening and the differences between how people live.
Boy, that's very interesting. And when you say you use it, does that when you're consulting with developers?
Yeah, when you know, I work on large communities and lifestyle alternatives like resorts. So we're constantly making decisions about basically how to spend their money, because there are a million ways you can spend money in a house. As just like there's a million ways you can spend it on a resort or a resort community. And you want to put the money in the right place.
That's very interesting. I wonder if a real estate agent would find the book, The Builder's Guide to Move-Up Buyers, I wonder if they would find that helpful and to deal with buyers and a perspective?
You know, there was a byproduct of this that was created many years ago, and it was aimed at the realtor markets to help them diagnose maybe what some of the differences are among their clients. So it was embraced somewhat by the realtor community, not as much by them as it was by the builder community, but a lot of realtors got on board and we're using it.
And it's the same book. You didn't do anything different.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. The Builder's Guide to Move-Up Buyers. I'll have to look for that. My guest is Mr. Brooke Warwick, and president of American Lives Market Research and Innovation. And I love that. I love that. I, you know, you've been on a couple of times, but I don't think we ever really talked about the video and the book that much. So I'm glad to learn that. So you've been studying work at home for 25 years. Why would you study that before the pandemic?
Well, I started noticing that you know, when we were building houses, and no matter where they were around the country, that people were putting offices in the home. And, it could be a little shelf in the kitchen where you pay your bills or something like that. But more often than it was, you know, they were designating a bedroom or a den or a different part of the house. And it was a fully functioning office because they work from home at least part-time. Many of them work full-time. And in the late 90s, the numbers I was starting to see were in the 40 to 45% range of houses that had a designated space for an office. So I started looking at them, and they were in, you know, every odd place you could find in the home, and they weren't very functional. So we started designing them into houses and making them more functional, giving them storage, giving them light and all those kind of things so that people could live and work at home. And it was very successful.
Maybe outside entrance, maybe access to a restroom?
Access to restroom. Yeah, we found that there were a lot of therapists who were working at home, and the therapists didn't want their clients running through the kitchen to get to that back room. So you're exactly right. We put in, you know, separate doors to the outer doors, and we gave them extra parking space so that a person could drive up and not be noticed. And so So there were a lot of little tricks. And the other trick was that, you know, we didn't want the FedEx truck showing up every day of the week. So we had to be careful about FedEx deliveries. And so we made a deal with, you know, you could drop them off at the front gate or those kind of things. But we didn't want to increase traffic to the house. And therapists weren't a problem, but the FedEx guys were.
And because there was a business working at home, they inevitably, or some of them, would require FedEx deliveries, and you didn't want it in a like a residential neighborhood, or
you didn't want that many of them. The local neighbors started complaining that people were working at home. If it was transparent, you know, it was the office at home, they were communicating with work by electronics, then it was fine. But in the fact, if they had to have product or something delivered to the house, then that just sent up alert signs, and we wanted to manage that so that we would put those houses in certain places so it wouldn't disrupt the community. Or we could have them log in at the front gate and drop them off there. So there were several alternatives. But I'll tell you, you don't want 100 FedEx trucks and UPS trucks driving to your door into your community every day.
Right.
People will complain.
And to remind people, when you said drop them off the front gate, you were designing large communities and, you know, gated type communities.
Sure.
Over the course of your career, my guest is Brooke Warwick, and AmericanLives.com is his business website. But he's not going to really want to talk to you because he's dealing with resorts and large communities. But you can get a sense and get some good ideas. So that's very interesting. Of course, today, this was all pre-Amazon, when Amazon was going in and out of people's. Today, you can't tell who's got a home business or not, because everyone's getting deliveries night and day. So maybe it's
not. Oh, I know. The world has changed
quite a bit. Now, so from some studying all this and how you incorporated this, what suggestions would you have? Or let's transition to what you've seen COVID's impact on this home office and how you would make recommendations to people.
Well, the first thing during the COVID phase that we're in now, or have been in for a couple of years now, is that people were forced to go home and work out of their homes. So that was a new environment. You know, thank God we had Zoom and, you know, other electronic vehicles that would facilitate this. But businesses told their people to go home for good reason. Now, those people at first, you know, they'd take over a bedroom or a den or, you know, in the living room or family room. And so, but the problem is that working at home, if you have a family, and most people do, it requires a private space and it requires a public space. And the private space is, you need, you know, when you do those Zoom phone calls, you don't want the cat and the dog wandering in. I'm always amused when I see the cat jumping on the desk of the next to the microphone. And so that's not a very good private space. And while it's cute on TV, it's probably not cute if you're the head of a company and you're trying to talk to your VP. So that space needs to be private, in the sense that you can put doors on a bedroom, and you can put glass doors on it, because you also need public space. One of the biggest complaints is that parents or families, they can't see out to know what's going on in the rest of the house, so they're isolated. Now, these are easy fixes when you design homes, and a lot of people are retrofitting their homes so that they have these accommodations, because while it started as a trend of businesses making you do it, people discovered that, wow, working at home is really good. I don't have that 45-minute commute each direction and all the rest of the benefits. So it's turned out that from a lifestyle standpoint, it is very popular, and people are trying to figure out how to make it work, even in light of their bosses saying, you got to come back. Maybe I'll come back on Monday and Wednesday, and the other days I'll work at home. So there's a lot of negotiation going on. But the idea is that we're going to have more offices in the home, more workers in the home. I was interviewing a couple up north of here, and both of the couples have businesses in the home, and they both need separate spaces. So, we're seeing multiple businesses in the home as a result of the pandemic forcing people out of offices and cubicles.
That's a good point. My guest, Mr. Brooke Warwick, AmericanLives.com. And I like the idea where you want isolation, where you want privacy, but you don't want isolation. So you're adding glass doors. But I do want to caution people, if you do that, don't throw any stones. So COVID is something I heard once. I don't know if it's applicable. So this is very interesting. So this is, it's interesting that you were studying this starting 25 years ago. It was happening. And of course, it's just been accelerated now. And you're right. People are saying, yeah, I like this. And so people are doing a lot of, retrofitting, I suppose. And, when you do this, so you're doing major, communities, as a matter of fact, the last time you were on a couple years ago or last year, you talked about the Santa Lucia Preserve, is it called?
Yeah, that's up in Karma Valley, California. It's 20,000 acres and 350 houses. Go figure.
I immediately got a hold of them, and they were my guest, and their interview is on RadioRealEstate.com. I think 20,000 acres is something like larger than New York City. There was some stat.
It's 1.5 times the size of Manhattan.
Wow.
I've worked on real estate forever, and I know how big an acre is. When they told me how big this was, I said, "Nah, it's not that big." And then they told me that statistic, and I said, "It's that big."
that's phenomenal. They were very friendly and nice. It was a great interview, and they invited me to come up there, and I still would love to do that. It was amazing scale. So with this, what do you guess? We talked about sanctuary and the homes. What do you predict? Have we reached a level? Is it going to get any different? Or what do you think the future
is? I think more people are going to... I think this is a huge disruption. The people in Silicon Valley talk about disrupting markets. Well, you can't disrupt the market more than COVID has disrupted our market. So I think that more people are going to find the benefits of working at home, and they're going to push it with their bosses until they get an accommodation that works for them. They know one of the companies I work with, they're 3 weeks off and 1 week on, and all their people live in several states away from the headquarters, and so they just fly in for the week and go to their meetings and then go home for the other 3 weeks. I mean, there are going to be lots of accommodations, but the fact that we have more desire for offices in the home is huge.
Very true. My guest, Brooke Warwick, president of American Lives. It's a market and research innovation group, AmericanLives.com. When you were talking earlier about your... Let's see, was it the... It was the book, The Builder's Guide to Move-Up Buyers.
Uh-huh.
And you're talking about how people with the same amount of money really wanted different things. I just was, just by fluke, I didn't know we'd even talk about this, But there's a quote from Henry David Thoreau I want to read you that I heard over the weekend. And it says, the beauty of a house is how it expresses the authentic life of its occupants. Such homes have an almost indescribable quality to them. They stand out. You can see them from a mile away, not because of any grandeur or wealth, but because they just fit. Being in them is a privilege, like being invited into the very blood and bone of their owners. Henry David Thoreau.
And one of my favorites, too. I mean, he pretty much captured it. They reflect who we are or who we want to be. Let's put it that way. And it influences design. Like a nest house, you put a garden in front and a door that you can't see from the street. Whereas on the monument house, the house that wants to explain everything to the market, to the city, that house leans forward. In other words, the front door is a showcase. I mean, you want to put all kinds of things around it and lead up to it with landscaping so that everybody sees it. So, and those are different lifestyles, and they're not better or worse. They're just different, but they reflect who we are.
That's interesting. I'm glad you like Thoreau. I should have taken a commercial break before I read the Thoreau so we could continue this thread. I'd like to take a commercial break now, and you could tell me your favorite quote, and I'll give you my favorite quote from Thoreau. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. Mr. Brooke Warwick is my guest. He's president of American Lives, a market research and innovation group, and AmericanLives.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.